Moncrief on News Talk
with the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Farming on Moncrief with Mairead Lavery.
Mairead Lavery joins us once again. Mairead, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I got your bit there about suicide and do animals die by suicide? Well, my husband would absolutely say yes. And particularly, now we're sheep farmers, so we know sheep well. But there's always this little lamb that's born that needs to be stomach tubed, that will just barely survive. You'll put hours and hours and hours of care into it. It'll wander around, it'll get in the way of everything, and it'll eventually end up in a bucket of water or something like that. Just, my husband calls it, you know, no will to live, and find many ways to... You know,
I mean,
they
actively try to kill themselves.
Well, it's just, you know, maybe it's just an awkward or not very smart sheep and or little lamb. But it's just after all the effort and work you put in to kind of getting them healthy and getting them strong, then they go out, maybe they put out the grass and the next thing you find them wrapped around an electric wire or they've done something to themselves. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he would be absolutely convinced that there are some sheep. And it's not because they're depressed or naturally. It's just that maybe they're just awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, God love them.
Yeah.
The poor things.
Now, the poor things now.
Yeah. Now, I suppose it's a story that would be bigger if there wasn't so many other things going on.
The flooding.
The flooding, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you often kind of, there's kind of this underlying thing about the flooding. Well, sure, why did they build their house there or why did they build their farm there? Unlike, say, some of the urban areas which are flooded, bad planning is a lot of the problem there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But out the countryside, you're talking about farms that have been operating for 100 plus years. So, you know, it's been farmland as long as anybody can remember. But these floods are just, well, like, it's understandable what has happened in terms of the floods, because we've had, what, 26 days straight rain from the 1st of February, three major storms. The water, it's like, do you know the way you ever make yourself a cup of tea on the counter in the kitchen and you put too much milk into it, or a cup of coffee and too much milk, and you're trying to get from there to the sitting room to sit down without kind of spilling the whole bloody lot? Well, it's a bit like that with the way the rivers have been at the moment. They're just at their top of their capacity. And I was coming up by train this morning, and outside Templemore station on the Dublin side of Templemore, there was a huge amount of flooding happening there. But down around the Shannon, farmers are really frustrated because they maintain that the Shannon is not being looked after and the water isn't able to get away. Now, I don't know whether that's sending the problem down the country, down to Partheen, down to Clare, places like that. But I have a family member who has a barge on the Shannon, and, you know, they've spent every summer for the last 25 years up and down the Shannon. And they tell me that the Shannon has become so much more clogged up with silt, with trees. There's little islands being, you know, emerging out of all of this muck, and that the passageways to get through with boats are not as good as they used to be when they started 25 years ago. Now, that's her experience. I've never gone boating on the Shannon, so I don't know. So that's from the point of an amenity point of view, tourist point of view. So if the water isn't getting away, it's just going to spill out over the edges. And that's what it's doing. And there's nothing to stop it. It just kind of rolls across tens of thousands of acres of countryside. Now, fixing that upside at the top of the Shannon, I mean, as I say, what's the implications the whole way down? And, you know, that would have to be dealt with.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could probably put a minister in charge of the Shannon, because they've been talking about draining it and looking after it.
The dredging thing, as I understand it, they used to do that, but they stopped for some reason.
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of it is environmental, because habitats have been created.
Yes,
but then there's this other problem with it. But I mean, the frustration in a household, anyone, you know, spill anything in the kitchen, you know, not a mind having 3 or 4 feet of water or a metre of water inside in your downstairs rooms, or even worse still, looking out at it and wondering, will it ever stop? You know, it's horrendous for householders. And then for farmers, you've got maybe the household in problems as well. But your yard, where you're storing your silage or your hay, where you're milking your cows, where your sheep are inside waiting to lamb, your livestock all indoors, and the next thing, it gets flooded. Sure, everything has to be moved. You have to try and find alternative space for them. Not simple, even down to milking cows. You can't do it where there's floodwaters. It's dangerous. So it's just a complete and utter mess for people at the moment.
And it does seem notwithstanding whether, you know, the Shannon should be dredged or whatever. Mm. It does seem this is kind of like the new normal, because it's not just us in Britain.
That's what's driving people,
a yearly thing.
Yeah, that's what's really upsetting people, that this is happening once every 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, maybe it was a once in a 25-year experience in the past. But, I mean, I coming up here this morning, I had to drive from Shannon Golden into Limerick. And, you know, in that space, I got into the car, and there was no frost on the ground. I mean, there was nothing on the window. And by the time I got into Limerick, I'd had snow, hail, sleet and serious rain. And my husband, when he left the house at 8:15, there was ice on the windows of his car, even though there was none on mine at whatever, 6:15.
Genie.
So, you know, even like just the way the temperature is changing is massive. But it's really frustrating. Like for the guys and the girls, again, I know sheep best. For the guys and the girls who are out there lambing, it looks grand if you can't get them out of the land. And you would hate to put little lambs out in this kind of weather, or calves for that matter. But if you leave them inside in a shed with yows, you know, they're lovely. And I think I've told this story before. I remember it happened to us one year. We kept them in as they lambed, and we let them all run around, and all the little lambs were as fat as thieves. They were so cushy and comfortable. And then when the weather turned, we let them out into the field. And what happened? Half the lambs were rejected by their mums. They wouldn't feed them. They kicked them away and butted them away. And within like 24 hours, we had all these little lambs shivering and cold and empty. And it was a fierce lesson we learned in terms of not being able to. Or if you mix a whole lot of lambs up with a whole lot of yows,
they don't
get the chance to bond. The real kind of cheeky ones will go off and take milk from any yow that'll deliver it to them. But when they go outside then with bigger spaces, they're not able to survive. So we had an awful job. We ended up with kind of dozens of pets that winter, trying to feed them to keep them alive.
Crikey.
So again, but people now, they're in the middle of lambing. They can't let them out because the ground is just macerated. It's like, you know, it's like blancmange out there. And you can't let the animals out, but you have to in somewhere kind of, you know, manage the situation that animals are bonding with their offspring, because then when they go out, they'll hold on to them rather than kick one of them away and say, you don't belong to me.
Yeah. Right. So what birds should we be listening out for this time of year?
Well, it's more positive actually. Yeah. Well, a positive note. This is there's a new biodiversity recording scheme, and it's called the Farmer's Wildlife Calendar, and it's a climate tracker, and it's stuff that happens kind of every year regularly, more or less as clockwork, within a couple of days, like the snowdrop the snowdrops come up in December and they run through January, February. You know, in March you have the daffodils coming. So these are kind of timed to nature. And now, and mind you, you can get stuff that goes on a lot longer. But it's like frog spawn. You know, you always saw frog spawn by Patrick's Day.
Mm.
Now, would most kids know what frog spawn is anymore, I wonder? I presume they probably do. Anyway, they're looking for farmers to record when they see the first barn swallows, the first cuckoo, the first primroses. Now, we've primroses flowering on the ditches at home. The blackthorn flowering, frog spawn, orange-tipped butterfly, the grey mining bee, and the large red damselfly. So I don't know so many of those at all, but I do know the swallows, the cuckoos, the primroses, and the blackthorn and the frog spawn.
I wouldn't know what a grey mining bee looks like.
No, I don't know either. So it's a national biodiversity data centre. They're looking for farmers to support this. We have been feeding the little birds, and we've just got hundreds of them now. We're buying the stuff in like 20 kg bags. Bird seed and peanuts.
Those are the words got out.
The word has got out. But anyway, I'm always conscious of trying to get scatter stuff on the ground, because the little wrens can't hold on to the cages, because they're high up. And we're getting more and more of them now where the crows can't get at them, because the crows are just so smart. Oh my God, they are so smart. But yesterday we put out Niger seed. Or Negra seed. I'm not sure what's the pronunciation of it. It's black seed, and seemingly the small birds absolutely devour it. Took them a couple of hours to find it, or to locate that there was this new potential food source. The place, I'd say I had 200 small birds. It was absolutely crawling with little birdies. I don't know where they'd been hiding. Mm. And then they'd all just make a swoop together, and all you could see is like little silver wings. So we've loads of tits and finches and they're the main ones there at the moment. There's loads of little wrens and a couple of others that I just don't recognise now. I have a book, but you never look at them, see them long enough.
Yeah.
But they're lovely to have around the place. But the crows then, of course, come down
and steal everything.
Yes. Yeah. But they haven't discovered this new black seed that I've got the birds at all yet.
I suppose I should ask you about the coronavirus. Does it have implications? I mean, if at the moment, of course, we don't have any confirmed cases here, but we're assuming sooner or later we will, does that have an effect on food exports, I wonder?
Well, no, we won't stop you exporting food. What's the problem with the food and exporting it for China is containers.
Right.
I don't know. It's they estimated. The problem is that over in China, the ports haven't been working. They haven't been clearing out these containers. And they reckon there's a backlog. Is it something like 300,000 cargo containers a week? They've cancelled that many containers. So there's thousands and thousands of containers inside in the ports, but they have been unable to unload the cargo. And this has meant that there's no cargo or containers heading back either with goods from China to Europe or moving back to Europe to collect more product.
Mm-hmm.
So actually one of the biggest problems is getting containers out there or releasing the containers. So that's the biggest problem. In terms of, say, beef, you know, it's been a growing market for beef. China is very important. But it's still only a small market because we've only got in there in the last 2 years. So the real impact there is an indirect impact in that Argentina and South American countries are big suppliers into China. If they can't get into China because the ports are blocked and there's no containers, it means they're going to look for alternative markets, which means Europe, which is going to undercut Irish beef prices. So that's the indirect impact. Pig meat, we've had a huge jump in the sales of pig meat to China because they've had African swine fever and they've had to slaughter something like half their complete pig herd over there, which has made a shortage of protein. And Irish pig farmers, first time they've been making serious profits in 40 years because of this. So that is a real concern. The dairy end of it, big suppliers, they're our third biggest dairy market, but we're only starting the dairying year. Farmers are only calving at the moment. So there isn't that backlog of milk being made into produce. So hopefully by the time May, June turns around, when we've got this big volume of milk coming through the system, the markets will be reopened and it won't impact as severely as, you know. Now, God alone knows if coronavirus comes into Europe very significantly and there's complete closures and lockdowns here.
We shall see. Hopefully not. Mairead, thanks a million for coming into us. Mairead Lavery there from the Farmers Journal.